Welcome in latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And that is, of course, the Dean over there. You know him as Stephen Lassen, Senior Editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, another week of SEC action is in the books. We're ready to preview another one here in a minute. How you doing, my friend?
Mike, I am doing great. I'm always excited to be talking some SEC ball with you, especially after another exciting weekend. And man, do we have some massive matchups on tap for week five. And you start looking at the schedule down the road. I think the crazy thing is you start looking, it's like almost like an SEC Super Bowl almost every week with Alabama, Georgia. We still got Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas, Oklahoma, Texas, Georgia. So, man, we're just getting into the meat of the schedule. Like, this has been an appetizer these first 4 weeks of the year.
Right. So this weekend, we do have one non-conference game, but everything else is conference play. It's going to be one heck of a Saturday slate. We're going to break that all down. But we also got Stephen's updated playoff projections. We're going to get to that in a minute. The panic meter here, one of my favorite things we do each and every week with Stephen here, talk about the panic level meter. And we've got about five teams we can hit on there before we preview the SEC games. And then I went a step further. Sad to say, but we'll celebrate it, Stephen. We're a quarter of the way through the season, so
That's depressing, Mike.
But hey, we're gonna celebrate it because we're gonna hand out some quarter season awards. But before we do all of that, Stephen, gotta let the fine folks know that we're brought to you by MyBookie, the online sports book. Head on over to MyBookie.ag today. That's the web address, MyBookie.ag. Sign up for a free account. And if you use the promo code THATSEC, that's THATSEC, they're willing to match your initial deposit all the way up to $1,000 with a minimum deposit of $50. And I hit my bookie lock of the week once again. So did cousin Shane. And I apologize, Steve. What was your lock last week? I'm about to mock it or celebrate you.
Ole Miss.
Yeah. Another win. I mean, that's all we do is hand out winners over here. You know what?
Absolutely. Hey, I mean, we've been, I think, pretty solid against the spread. We've been pretty good straight up. There was one idiot on the show. He will not be named, who picked Auburn to beat Arkansas. But we'll look past that, right?
We will. But hey, like I said, we got a ton to get into here, Stephen. So let's just get right into it. And I love showing these as well. So here's the updated SEC scoring efficiencies after 4 weeks of play. And if this is news, your first time seeing this, it's very, very simple. How many snaps are you taking on offense and how many points are you scoring? That if you're doing well, like Alabama and Ole Miss, you're all the way to the right. If you're doing poor in that aspect, you are the Kentucky Wildcats. Now for defense, same thing. How many snaps are you facing? How many points are you giving up based on those snaps you're facing? So Ole Miss, by the scoring efficiency on defense, has the best defensive scoring efficiency in the SEC, while surprisingly LSU all the way dead last. But as you look here, Stephen, you know, it's starting to get a little bit more varied as the weeks go on. And yes, I realize Ole Miss has played a very cupcake schedule. We've talked about that ad nauseum. So if you're a hater of them, I guess you could use that critique. But aside from that, Stephen, does anything jump out to you as you look at here, the SEC scoring efficiencies?
Absolutely. I think one of the interesting things looking at this graphic is you're seeing the playoff contenders cluster together in the right sort of quadrant. You know, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Texas, Georgia, and Alabama. All playoff contenders, all clustered in that elite category for offense and defense. I think some of the other things that you're seeing there is Missouri. That's one of the teams that I'm going to be watching really close over the next couple weeks. And they are not quite in that elite category. And you also see the same thing with LSU. So two playoff contenders that I'm going to be kind of curious to see where they end up on this quadrant. So, but I think you're kind of starting to see with more SEC games, with more power conference games, that we're going to see some variation in this. And I think that's what I'm watching, is to see if LSU and Missouri work their way into that elite category. I'm not really Auburn is kind of surprising on that list to me, but I think that the SEC play will kind of sort itself out as far as where they are in this chart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and certainly, let me ask it to you this way, Stephen. If you're just listening, so LSU again, they got the worst defensive scoring efficiency in the SEC, and they are in the, I'd say, bottom third, or in offenses, they're right on that fringe there as well. Does that concern you if you're an LSU fan at 3-1, or are you sitting here saying, well, heck, we could barely have played any worse, yet we are 3-1. If we could pick it up and start playing better, maybe LSU could make a jump. Where would you lean on that one?
Yeah, they're kind of a confusing team almost, because I think you're absolutely right. I mean, they found ways to win against South Carolina after falling behind, got off to a slow start against UCLA, but eventually put them away. I think the good news is they can play a lot better probably on both sides of the ball, and especially with the schedule coming up. You get Ole Miss, you get Alabama at home, and of course you get Texas A&M on the road. So there are some challenges here for this team. I think the other side of this is can the defense get better without Harold Perkins? Is the rushing attack going to be able to fix itself even more during the season? I like what I saw out of Caden Durham against South Carolina, but are they going to be able to replicate that going forward? And so I guess my kind of takeaway on LSU right now is I don't know if the defense can get a whole lot better during the season, and you're probably going to end up with a bunch of kind of 50-50 toss-up games. Certainly, like I said, Ole Miss, Alabama come to your place, but you have to go on the road to play A&M. The schedule isn't that difficult, so I still think that this LSU team can absolutely be a playoff contender. I'm just thinking this might be the, I guess maybe the most chaotic team week to week in the SEC, if that makes sense.
Right. No, definitely. It completely makes sense, Stephen. So, again, before we get into your updated playoff projections here after 4 weeks of the season, we wanted to celebrate the quarter mark of the season. So I asked Stephen to have a list ready, and he said, man, this, why are you giving me all this extra work? I'm already overworked over here. This is a hard exercise. So we'll see what he came up with. I came up with my own, Stephen. So let's say, and again, this is very difficult to do because not everybody plays the same schedule. I get it. Some people have had an easier road. Some people have had a tougher road. And we're not saying, we're not sitting here saying who's going to win the Heisman by making these picks. We're saying if they handed the award out today, who would we give it to? So let's start right there, Stephen. Who is the top candidate from the SEC that you believe, if they gave out the award today, would win the Heisman Trophy?
So I think if he didn't get hurt, I think Quinn Ewers would actually be the pick here because of that game that he had against Michigan a few weeks ago, against one of the nation's best defenses, a strong performance on the road. But I think now that he's missed a game and sort of missed a partial of another, I kind of went with Jackson Dart here. His numbers, and granted, Ole Miss has played a very easy start to the season. But one thing I always go back to, when you play a competition that you are heavily favored, that is overmatched, I want to see domination. And those scores and that stats tell me Ole Miss is rolling offensively. And also the tape shows that, I mean, just watching this team through the first four games. So I went with Jackson Dart. Some of it's statistical. And I just think you can make a case that through the first couple weeks of the season, either Jackson Dart has maybe been the best quarterback, not only in the SEC, but maybe in college football, just because of how well he's played, albeit against questionable competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no issue with that, Stephen, but I'm not knocking Quinn for getting banged up, because now that Michigan has beat Southern Cal, I think that makes that win look even more impressive. Give me Quinn Ewers still. Now, if he's out for several more games, maybe that adjusts things. But Sark said today that Quinn's already back to practicing, so it certainly seems like he's getting closer and closer to the field. But this was a tough decision. I'm going Quinn Ewers, but it sounds like he was virtually right there with you as well.
Absolutely. If he played against UTSA and Louisiana Monroe, he would be number one on my board. So I just knocked him because of injury. But, I think, some we talked about all offseason was the quarterback depth in this conference, because let's not forget Jalen Milroe. If Carson Beck didn't have such a sluggish performance against Kentucky, we would all be talking about how great he was against Clemson. So, man, just so many good choices here at quarterback.
Cousin Thomas says the LSU officials should get the Heisman. All right, how about SEC Coach of the Year? And again, we're not saying this is going to be the Coach of the Year by the end, but we're saying if they gave it out today, who would you give that to? Very curious to see who you selected here, Stephen.
So there were two games that I kind of knocked candidates for. If Arkansas had beaten Oklahoma State or if South Carolina had beaten LSU, I think Shane Beamer or Sam Pittman is probably the choice here. So I kind of just went back to the top, and it's not always the best coach, you know, with all the talent sometimes doesn't always get the award. But in this case, I'm going to go with Josh Heupel. You know, 4-0, and I kind of go back to what I said about, you know, Jackson Dart is I like to see dominance. And Tennessee in two games against Power 5 competition has dominated. I know they beat Oklahoma by 10, but it felt like larger on watching in that game on Saturday night. So I think just the way that Tennessee has played this season, they've taken care of business in two Power 5 or Power 4 games. But also, I think one of the things that continues to go kind of overlooked about Tennessee is everyone, and rightfully so, I do it too. We talk about Nico, we talk about the passing game. Tennessee can hurt you with the run. They can hurt you with the defense, and they can hurt you with the passing game. They have one of the most versatile collections of ways to beat you in the country. And that's sort of, you know, the criticism of Josh Heupel when he came to Tennessee. Could he put a defense on the field that competes in the SEC week in and week out? We might have our answer this season, because that defensive front is pretty dang dominant. So I went with Josh Heupel, but I'm open to hearing other arguments there.
I may have to change my vote, Stephen, because North of Knox has got me convinced. How about Hugh Freeze? He's never to blame. So Hugh's not losing these damn games. It's the players, by God. Give it to Hugh Freeze. He's almost got me convinced. But I am going Shane Beamer, Stephen, because I think he got jobbed, and I think you know, had his quarterback not gotten hurt, they not only were they beaten LSU, I think they would have whooped LSU. And this was a guy, some people, who again we ain't mentioning because he's completely made amends, but some people had this guy run off Cousin Shane in the first couple weeks of the season. So my vote today goes to Shane Beamer. Could change. Again, we got some very, very, very difficult games upcoming, but if it was today, I think Shane Beamer's done a heck of a job, but that's nothing against Josh Heupel. You know, you made some very good points there.
I think there's a pretty compelling argument for Shane Beamer, just because of it's almost the look test. Like South Carolina's, first of all, they've looked like a much better team than I think we thought about in the preseason. They're 3-1, which I think is about where most people kind of projected them. You know, the other thing too, I think, is from a defensive perspective, they are much better than they were last year. And also I like the roster construction, what they did in the portal, the impact they're making. And no, to your point, I mean, they are three plays away from being 4-0, ranked in the top 25 and a fringe playoff contender. So I think they are, just in general, I think they are a better team than what I thought coming into this year. So that would be, he'd be a very strong candidate for this award.
Now, who is the worst coach of the year? An award they should give out, but they don't.
Hugh Freeze.
Oh, come on. It ain't his fault, Steven.
He only made one bad call, right? A few weeks ago. What is it? Two now after losing to Arkansas. No, I mean, you know, I think from just at the most basic level, when you looked at Auburn's schedule coming into the season, they had eight home games this year. You had the favorable path to start the season, five to start the year at home. It's your second year. You should be in a better spot. You answered some of those offseason questions. You brought in, you know, more, you know, better weapons at receiver. So I just think I'm a little bit disappointed in the fact that Auburn is not better with the schedule and with some of the pieces that they had. So I went with Hugh Freeze, but I'll hear an argument for Billy Napier or someone else this year too.
That's my man, Billy Napier. Come on. How's he even still the coach down there? I'll never know. But that may be coming to an end come October 5th. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, it's just, I talked him up all off season. He had me roped in, and everything he said was true when it came to, this is my best team, this is my most experienced team, and by God, Steven, this is probably his worst team. You know what I mean? So give my vote to Billy Napier with Hugh Freeze in the passenger seat with old Billy over here. So yeah, there is no wrong answer here. They're just both wrong, in my opinion.
It's You know, I think it's probably an indictment on Billy Napier's tenure that beating Mississippi State, and it is obviously Mississippi State's in a year zero situation, is the type that kind of quiets the noise around the program for a week, right? I mean, you don't expect Florida to be in that spot. And like you, I bought into the fact that, hey, they would be better this year, and they've been embarrassed twice against the top 25 teams they played, and they still had several issues that showed up on Saturday. So I went with you, Freeze, Mike, but there's not a wrong answer here. Freeze or Napier is pretty strong.
Cousin Shane has shown up in the comments. He said if he had some damn kids who knew how to play, Auburn would be undefeated. Biggest Hugh Freeze defender out there. All right, how about SEC Offensive Player of the Year?
I'll go boring here. I think if they're the Heisman winner in September, they got to be the Offensive Player of the Year. So I went with Jackson Dart here. You know, kind of like I said, it's just the statistical start to the season, the fact that Ole Miss offense has just been rolling week after week, 50-plus points, piling up the yardage. You know, I think another strong candidate here could be someone like Dylan Sampson, you know, Jaquindon Jackson. Also could throw Quinn Ewers in here, too. So if you want to split the award up, I don't have a problem with that. But I stuck with Jackson Dart just because he was my Heisman winner.
Well, that's exactly what I did. I split it so I can make two fan bases happy. But really, give me Jackson Dart, quarterback. I mean, he's just been a monster. His numbers are, you know, the definition of what they say, video game type numbers. And he's not even having to play all these games. So Jackson Dart, very excited to see him this week face again. Kentucky's defense is really good. So, but a quarter way in, Offensive Player of the Year, give me Jackson Dart. How about Defensive Player of the Year, Steven?
This is tough. You know, I think there are a couple good candidates here, and I think you could kind of pick somebody from Ole Miss's defense considering the start that it has. I actually went with Kyle Kennard from South Carolina. Just because I think, like we said, their defense seems to be much improved from last year, leads the SEC in sacks, making an impact after transferring in from Georgia Tech right away. So I went with Kyle Kennard, the defensive end from South Carolina. A lot of splash plays early in the season. Maybe I went too much on the splash there, but he's my pick for defensive player of the year in September.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Steven, that's exactly where I went. Kyle Kennard, South Carolina. I mean, this guy came out of nowhere here after transferring in. And every great thing people have said about Dylan Stewart is valid as well. But they're so elite with that tandemness that they have there. So give me Kyle Kennard, monster off the edge. If he can keep it up, South Carolina is going to be a force on defense, at least getting to the quarterback, among the best in the entire SEC. You know what?
You know, Mike, I think it's pretty notable that at Georgia Tech, Kyle Kennard's best season of sacks was 6, and he's already got 5.5 through the first 4 games of the year. I think that says, you know, some good things about what Clayton White and the South Carolina defense is doing. But man, I mean, think about that duo of Kennard, and I think Dylan Stewart's pretty much your freshman of the September in the SEC. That all of a sudden, a group that has been kind of a question mark for South Carolina, they've got two of the best ends in the SEC right now. So kudos to Beamer and Clayton White for what they've done on that side of the ball so far.
How about a special teams player of the year? Do you have one, Steven?
I'm actually gonna have to defer to you on that one. I did not write it down in my notes here, so I'm getting it together.
I went with Alex Rayner, the Kentucky kicker. So for years they didn't have a kicker. And he didn't even win SEC Player of the Week, Steven, after making all these kicks that nearly knocked off Georgia. He was the only offense they had in that game. Give me Alex Rayner. I looked it up, Steven. There's not a lot of kick returns these days, but there's 0 kick return touchdowns in the SEC this year, and there's only been 3 punt returns, and it's one apiece, so no one's even got 2. So I didn't really even consider many returners. But give me Alex Rayner. And the Mizzou kicker, he was good till last week. He lost it for me. I would have given it to Blake Craig, but he ain't on the list right now.
Yeah, you know, that was my kind of debate when I was looking through this, is like, there's really not a whole lot of returns anymore, and it's right. Also hard to award a punter, you know, unless someone has just been amazing at dropping the ball inside the 20. So, no. Rayner was on my list, or just somebody else who was great at field goals this year. And I mean, you could, A&M's kicker has been great at times. He's missed some. And of course, the Missouri game on Saturday. So no, I think he's probably at the top of my list too, Alex Rayner.
So who's the best coordinator at the quarter mark of the season, do you think?
I got 3 names, and I had a hard time sifting through these. So maybe we can talk through these and we can figure out. I wrote down Pete Golding from Ole Miss. Obviously, the level of competition.
Yep.
Tim Banks, I think, at Tennessee, came into the season as sort of prove it year for him. I think so far, so good for Tennessee's defense. And Bobby Petrino at Arkansas. Nearly 6.8 yards per play. That's up from 4.93 for Arkansas last year. So if I had to pick, I probably would pick Tim Banks, but I'm open to another coordinator there.
Right. No, I think you nailed it, Steven. I put Bobby Petrino a close second in my book, I basically just asked you these questions so we could talk about Tim Banks. Come on, Steven. I mean, Tennessee's defensive coordinator's just done such a remarkable job, and this is a guy that a lot of Tennessee fans ready to run off after the first and second year down there at Tennessee. And they've gotten better and better and better on the defensive side of the football every year under Josh Heupel. And I know we're just a quarter of the way in, but this by far looks like his best unit. So give me Tim Banks. And if the defense continues to play at this level, which won't be easy because they got some elite competition coming up, but if they continue to play at this level, Tennessee can win the national championship. And I don't even think that's a bold statement.
No, it's not bold at all because, you know, kind of like we talked about earlier, Tennessee's got one of the best offensive lines in the country, and it can only get better once Lance Hurd and John Campbell are back to 100%. And I don't have a doubt about Heupel's ability to score points. I know that every week they're probably going to be good for at least 30, unless when they're playing Georgia, maybe. But defensively is where Tennessee has made the biggest strides. And with that defensive front, Tennessee's got a chance to beat anybody in the country. So Tim Banks, the fact it was a prove-it year, the fact there have been questions about this, the direction of this group, 4 weeks in, two power conference opponents, I think so far so good, probably the most, maybe, fair to say, optimistic expectations coming into this year.
Mm-hmm. And now what about worst coordinator? Again, another award that should be honored in this country. I don't know why it's not, but we honor it here.
It's like dishonored more than anything. I went with Coleman Hutzler at Mississippi State.
I mean,
questionable hire to begin with. No play calling experience in the SEC or elsewhere, kind of been a pretty solid assistant on special teams and elsewhere. But for a defense that has a ton of questions and personnel turnover coming into this year, putting your faith in a first year guy seems like a pretty heavy lift, and it's showing up on the field. I mean, we've seen it every week. Mississippi State struggled to stop the run. They struggled to keep teams out of the end zone. So I went with Coleman Hutzler. Obviously going to give him a little bit of a break because it is a year zero type situation, but man, it's been bad down there in Starkville. Toledo took it to him, Arizona State and Florida. So he right. It was easy pick in my mind.
Cousin Morgan had a good point. He says Seth Luttrell. I wrote his name down first, yeah. Steven. Cousin Matt said, how about, can we count Billy for this too? Which I almost did that as well. But no, I went with Coleman Hutzler. The only thing worse, Steven, than hiring a head coach who's got absolutely no experience to come into this league, good luck, first of all. But the only thing worse than that is if he turns around and hires a defensive coordinator that's never done it before. I mean, that's just so idiotic. And again, Coleman Hutzler, he may be a fantastic defensive mind, and in 2 or 3 years, we might be looking back and saying, man, this guy's Dave Aranda 2.0. I mean, we're not going to, but we could, and still, this would have been a bad hire because Mississippi State's not going to give him 3 years to figure this out. And if Jeff Lebby doesn't turn this around, you know, I think he should fire this guy as soon as possible to you know, if this continues, and get a quality experienced defensive mind in his program to go with his inexperience of being a head. I mean, heck, get a defensive coordinator that's been a head coach. I don't care if he was terrible as a head coach, but he's good as a coordinator. Get him in there. You need all the help you can get down there. This is foolishness.
You mentioned Dave Aranda. He might be available. After Baylor's interesting defensive tactics in defending Colorado's Hail Mary on Saturday night. Oddly, you mentioned some other defensive. Ron Roberts might be available too.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah. Next year. Bring a ball. You so know, that,
right? Yeah, there will be options if Jeff Lebby wants to move on from Coleman Hutzler. But it's, you know, giving up over 7 yards of play to Florida, over 6 to Toledo. granted, giving him a little bit of a break because of the personnel, but this is, it's been worse, I think, than I expected.
All right, and then the last two, we're going to do biggest pleasant surprise. Who has surprised you the most at the quarter mark of the season?
How about Vanderbilt? I mean, probably a couple plays away from 4-0.
Yeah.
They probably should have beat Georgia State, to be frank. You know, that's a game they really shouldn't have lost. But I think I came into the year with just such low expectations for this team and wondering about the direction under Clark Lea. But I think he nailed all of his offseason hires. Jerry Kill, Tim Beck as offensive coordinator, bringing in Diego Pavia. They have now beaten a pretty solid Virginia Tech team, and they took Missouri to the brink. So I think they've just been a really pleasant surprise, just being more competitive. And also, I mean, like I said, they could be, you know, two plays away from being 4-0, and we're sitting here talking about a ranked Vanderbilt team. But, you know, sitting here at 2-2, going to be a little bit harder to get to bowl eligibility, but still much improved, I think.
Right. And yeah, bad miss by me. I didn't have Vanderbilt, but I probably should have. I want to just show some love to Arkansas, because again, they're a play away from being 4-0 as well. When everybody had Sam Pittman gone and Bobby Petrino is our next interim, I mean, we'll get into this game in a moment here against A&M, but A&M, Tennessee, admittedly, that could be very, very, very difficult. But LSU, I mean, these next three, imagine in a world, Stephen, and I don't think this is, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I don't think it's far-fetched that Arkansas can go 2-1 in these next three. And if they would, you know, sitting here at 5-2, going in with games with Mississippi State and Louisiana Tech, and who knows what in the world to make of Missouri if they keep floundering, all of a sudden, this, again, now I'm not talking playoffs here, but, you know, winning eight games is on the table, I think, the way Arkansas has played so far, and that would stun me if you would have told me this a month ago.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if only they had beaten Oklahoma State, you know, we'd be sitting here at 4-0, and I think we'd be having a totally different, you know, kind of outlook on this season. But I mean, with their schedule, they have some real opportunities coming up to pick up marquee wins. But also, I love the way some of their games break. I mean, they get them in Fayetteville. They also catch like Ole Miss before they play Georgia. You know, you're kind of catching Tennessee before that Florida-Alabama stretch. So I think the timing of these games works out well. And also, if you're kind of Sam Pittman now, you've played four games. Like, the hot seat pressure has kind of decreased a little bit, but you're still going to be an underdog in a lot of these games. And so the fact that they are at home, the timing of them, the way that Arkansas played, like, Taylen Green is like the ultimate like X factor in all these games, because he could just show up and have a monster type of effort and Arkansas could win. So I think Arkansas has been pleasantly better than I anticipated at this point of the season.
Now, who's the biggest disappointment?
Well, I bagged on Auburn a little bit ago, so I'm gonna go with Florida this time, Mike. So, man, that idiot on your show this offseason who said they were gonna be better, said they'd have a chance to beat Miami, said they would get to a bowl game. Man, what an idiot. So here I am. I totally whiffed on this one in the preseason. I thought, like I said, I bought into the Billy Napier thing that they'd be better. Third year, the roster in better shape. They made some key transfer portal additions. They had so much experience back, Ron Roberts. None of it's worked out. They've played two games against ranked opponents, and they have been, I think, embarrassed in both of them. And I think the 41-17, 33-20 against Texas A&M does not really indicate of how one-sided those games were. And it's not going to get any easier for them. UCF is a threat to them. You got Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, and Florida State. So the path to six victories looks very, very small. I anticipated this team competing for a bowl game, probably going to be generous enough to get to four wins at this point.
I don't know what the opposite of love is. I guess hate, but I'll give Kentucky some hate then. Come on, Kentucky. This is supposed to be your year. All we got to do, Roush said, is win our home games. Well, good Lord, we lost the two. All the important ones we had Georgia on the ropes. That could have completely changed the narrative here. And I think I don't care that they whooped Ohio. That doesn't impress me, Stephen. I think this is a team Shane said could win 10 games. When the professor tells you that he's got this surprise team's going to win 10 games, you're thinking, my goodness, I got to run to Vegas, put money on it, because he nailed it with Missouri last year. And this year, I think he may have picked a team that may lose 10 games.
Well, the good news is there's still 8 games left, and they could still get the 10 victories, right? And they've already played the toughest opponent on their schedule, Georgia. Well, they still got to play Texas and Ole Miss. So, yeah, pretty much a long shot. But no, Mike, I think there kind of is a question for me about, and just watching Kentucky through the first 4 games of the season, they've kind of been all a really hard team to get a read on, because that game against Southern Miss was a mess because of weather. They got demolished by South Carolina. They played well against Georgia. Ohio has so many new pieces. I don't think we can read a ton into it this year. But for a team and kind of a program, you were wondering about what's the direction, especially after Mark Stoops wanted to leave for Texas A&M. I don't know that you have a ton of answers through the first 4 weeks of the season. And like I said, the schedule is going to get even more challenging with Texas and Ole Miss and still Tennessee to play.
Yeah, Cousin Chase, did I say 10 or did I say 6? Pretty sure I said 6. All right, Steven, let's move on with your updated playoff projections. And this, Steven does it for the entire country. But you think he'd do it just for the SEC based on this list. We got 6 SEC teams still in his updated projections with a couple more on the bubble. But number 1, Texas, according to Stevens, and this is a mix of projections, not just where they are today, but where he sees them playing out. So Texas winning the SEC would be the 1 seed. Ohio State winning the Big Ten would be the 2 seed. Miami winning the ACC would be the 3 seed. Utah winning the Big 12 would be the 4 seed. And if you don't know by now, or maybe you just have forgotten, the way this works out, they give the top 4 seeds to conference championship, highest rated conference champions. So even if, say, Georgia or Tennessee or Alabama is better than Miami, Ohio State, Utah, probably not better than all of them, but even if they are better, they cannot be in those because we can only have 1 SEC champion. So I hope that makes sense. But outside of the conference winners, Steve has got Georgia, number 5, hosting number 12 Boise State in the first round, and that would be it in Athens. What a sight that would be. Good luck, Boise. He's got Tennessee, number 6, so that Tennessee's moved up a little bit, hosting. Oh, maybe we will get this game this year, Steven. Number 11, Missouri. Oh, my God. I don't know this podcast would survive all the trash talk in the comments.
The stand on business bowl.
So number 6, Tennessee, number 11, Mizzou, and then number 7, Ole Miss, hosting number 10, Penn State. What a sight. And number 8, Alabama, hosting Oregon. And I can't believe this just hit me, Stephen, but what would happen to the world if we had 4 first round playoff games and all 4 were hosted by SEC teams? Oh my, sign me up for that today. You know what?
It's not crazy to think that can happen too. And I think your kind of breakdown of the playoff kind of also continues to show the biggest flaw in this system, which is Utah would probably be a fringe bubble team at this point of the season. You know, they're ranked 10, 11, 12 in some of the various polls out there. But, you know, if you just do these teams on a pure, you know, power ranking standpoint, then Ole Miss, Tennessee, Georgia are all much better. So the conference champion thing's a pretty big deal. Admittedly, I wish they just took the top 4 teams and gave them byes, which would certainly, you know, aid a team like Tennessee and Georgia on their path. But also, I think what's happening outside the SEC is really interesting too, because we saw this on Saturday that Utah beat Oklahoma State and Kansas State got destroyed against BYU. Some of the stuff that's happening outside the bubble is helping some of these SEC teams. And so a team like Missouri with a soft schedule, we're kind of wondering where they are at this point of the year. Some of these losses that are starting to add up in other conferences are going to help some of these teams in the SEC, but also it shows the kind of what's the shakeup still to come here, because Georgia, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, Texas and Georgia, there's still a lot to play for. But I think through the first 4 weeks of the season, I think if you're wanting to see 5 SEC teams, maybe even 6, I think that dream has gotten a lot more realistic through the first 4 weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm. And you know what also I dream about, Steven? I don't know about you, but I dream of a world where I can get breakfast for free. And we're going to provide that for the audience here, Steven. Head on over to HelloFresh. Yes, you read that right. HelloFresh.com/free SEC. And you know what you're going to get with that, Steven? You're going to get free breakfast for life as long as you have an active subscription of HelloFresh. So head on over to HelloFresh, Steven, for free breakfast item for life if you sign up and use the promo code FREESEC. That's FREESEC. One free breakfast item for life per box while your subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life. Just go to HelloFresh.com/FREESEC. And I mean, who doesn't love something for free, Stephen?
Free stuff. And also, like, you know, your most important meal of the day is taken care of. Yes. And you don't have to think about it. It's already there for you. That's a heck of a deal.
We already figured out Hugh Freeze doesn't eat breakfast. So I think that's why he's just so toxic right now. If he would eat breakfast from HelloFresh, I would be a big fan of his once again. You know what?
He's waiting on someone else to fix it.
Yep, exactly. All right, Steven. So let's get into the panic meter here. I mean, my goodness, Steven, we got a lot to panic about these days in the SEC. Who tops Steven Lass's list for panic meter after 4 weeks of the season?
Let's start with the only team that I graded out as a 10 on the panic meter this week, and that is the Auburn Tigers. Kind of like we talked about just a few minutes ago, Mike, I mean, a team that had such a favorable start to the season and also a season where the kind of consensus was you have improved your roster to support your quarterback enough. There's harmony on the coaching staff, kind of all those things this offseason. And yes, the yards per play, yes, the scoring average, all those things are nice. But in two games against power conference opponents, and one of those being Arkansas, they have scored exactly 14 points in both of those games. So in the games that, you know, have mattered, they have struggled. And so I think after four games and after what we saw against Arkansas on Saturday, the quarterback situation is just going to be a mess the rest of the year, because you have now tried Peyton Thorne, who wasn't the answer. You've tried Hank Brown. He wasn't the answer. Is Walker White going to get a chance at some point? I think that's kind of my point of curiosity. But this isn't going to get any easier. And all of a sudden, a schedule that should have been a slam dunk to get to a bowl game is now just going to be on the edge of like five or six wins. So I think if I'm an Auburn fan, my panic meter is at 10, because you wonder, can Hugh Freeze fix the offense? And where are the wins going to come from the rest of the year? Am I overreacting, Mike?
No, not at all. And I have even heard, Steven, that he made the decision to go with Hank Brown just to essentially appease the fans. And really, probably, you know, this is not like some state secret or something, but they got some wild boosters down there at Auburn. Or maybe wild's not the right word, but very powerful, influential boosters that wanted that done as well. So I mean, if that's true, and again, I don't know that that's true, but I have heard that from reliable people that coaching the team, and maybe that's why he's blaming people, you know,
he's not because, recruiting.
I mean, what in the world are we doing here? And again, last year it was the coordinators. It was their fault. And didn't you hire the coordinators? Yeah. But forget about that. I didn't have nothing to do with those guys. They were forced on me. Now let's get all the guys I'm comfortable with. Let's get the guys that I know, and another guy run the defense that, you know, everywhere he's been, the defense gets worse. Let's hire that guy and that'll fix everything. No, Stephen, this is going off the rails quickly here. I mean, I thought it would start perhaps this week against Oklahoma. I figured it would be 4-0, and these fans would be all in my mentions, tell me what a fool I am, and then they're going to the college football playoff, and then I thought reality would set in. Well, I mean, they've already been smacked with a different kind of reality, and it's, you know, they are one of the worst teams in the conference. And in this age of portal and NIL, you can't sit back and say, give me 3 or 4 years. Particularly now, this is exact opposite of Jeff Lebby, right? Where you're bringing a guy here that has won in this league, he's won in other places, He knows what he's doing. Yes, he's a scumbag, but sometimes, heck, Bobby Petrito's not that great either. And they adore him, you know, because he gets results. So they sold their soul to get results, and now they're not even getting results. So it's like, what in the heck do we sell our soul for here? And I don't have an answer for you. I just tell it like I see it, and that's where we're at right now.
I think what you're hoping for and what you sold out for would be that it's not just a 2-year fix. And I mean, this is taking the most like optimistic view of things would be that, okay, you've gone out and brought in Cam Coleman, you've brought in all these great receivers that maybe 3 years in, you go out and get your quarterback and you've sort of built the supporting cast around him. The problem with that is, and I think this kind of gets at what we've talked about with Florida, is proof of concept and positivity. You know, is at some point that sort of proof of concept is that you're just a 500 program. And also, I think as Hugh Freeze was sort of an offensive innovator at one point at Ole Miss, I think everybody's kind of running, I mean, something similar. It's not something new anymore that everybody's just used to. So I think sort of the innovation, the creativity has kind of run out. And also, if you can't get your quarterback situation sorted out, at some point, some of these top receivers are going to go, I can go play for Georgia. I can go play for Alabama. I could go catch passes from Nico at Tennessee next year and improve my stock and wait around. So I think there is a danger of that proof of concept positivity sort of selling hope and improvement running out real quick if they don't get to 7 or 8 wins this year. It's kind of tough to see that based upon their schedule.
He's a good man, though. All right. So who's next on your panic meter here, Stephen?
I'm going to go with Mississippi State at an 8. And, you know, in fairness to Mississippi State, coming into the year, this looked like a year zero type situation just because of all the transition on the coaching staff, all of the new surrounding the program with just 2 returning starters. It was very easy to see how this was going to be an uphill battle. But I think the panic meter has got to be running a little high here because Coleman Hutzler is defensive coordinator. He struggled, obviously a full caveat with the personnel questions, but also on the offensive side now without Blake Shapen. One of the reasons you had to have some optimism that, hey, they might be able to get this offense cranked up during the year was Blake Shapen. And just the fact of his experience, his sort of mobility, everything that he brought to the table. But now that he's out for the year, you're going to be asking Michael Van Buren, a true freshman, albeit someone who Jeff Lebby recruited and is pretty high on, to navigate against Texas and Georgia the next 2 weeks. So this is a really heavy lift. And I kind of said this after Toledo, I thought that was kind of rock bottom for this team. I mean, other than UMass on November 2nd, I mean, are they going to be within a touchdown, 10 points in any of these games as far as the spread? It's really hard to see. So if I'm Mississippi State, I think just a lot of alarms are going off and certainly will the rest of the year because there's just not a path, I think, without Blake Shapen to be competitive in some of these games.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't disagree with basically anything you said there, but I wouldn't necessarily say I'm panicking just because this is kind of what I mean, it's been pretty rough, obviously, but I thought, you know, maybe we could win 4 games. You know, I thought that was kind of the ceiling. So 4-8, 2-10, it's basically, you know, not far off from one or another. But I will panic if the defense looks as bad and we bring everyone back, you know. So, to me, it's like a year zero for Lebby. And you know, there have been opportunities for them to kind of wilt, particularly that Florida game. I mean, I believe the score was 28-7, and they came roaring back. It's the same thing against Arizona State. They were getting absolutely whooped. They came roaring back. So they've not quit, and they've showed some resilience. They're showing they're not headed in the right direction, but it's like they got the ship pointed that way, if that makes sense. So I heard Cousin Shane say it the other day. I see what they're going for. It's clearly not working, but I like the vision, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think one of the things that interests me about this team the rest of the way and knowing the schedule so difficult is who can you identify if you're Jeff Lebby that's a dude for you next year? Like, I think we've seen Isaac Smith at safeties. Obviously, he's one of the leading tacklers in the SEC. And also, I think, like, what does Michael Van Buren bring to the table? Because I think Blake Shapen's going to try for the hardship year next year. So you could have, in theory, 2 quarterbacks who know how to operate your system. You could have an even bigger question if Van Buren doesn't play well and Chapin doesn't come back, or he's slow to come back from injury. So there's still a lot of interest in this team for me from week to week, and just kind of seeing if they can find some answers for 2025.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just so, I know this is kind of off topic, but I think one of your other teams we're about to talk about, but it amazed me how, if you look at the analytics, I mean, Oklahoma was like top 10 in scoring efficiency last year with Jeff Lebby, and they hated that. That's probably a strong word, but they were like happy to see him go. I mean, Oklahoma would be in a world of a better place if they had Jeff Lebby as their play caller right now. You know what?
Yeah, I think in fairness to Seth Luttrell, I think I have been a little bit disappointed in some of the things offensively that we've seen from Oklahoma, which is also the next team on our panic meter.
Right, exactly. So we call that a segue. Yeah, yeah. So, well, what's the panic meter here for Oklahoma, Steven?
So I graded them out as a 6. I don't, maybe that's not high enough. And I think in fairness to Oklahoma transitioning to the SEC, we knew there were some challenges this year with the offensive line, and certainly, you know, I think getting a first year quarterback ready to play in the SEC. But I think the offensive line has been an even bigger issue than I anticipated. I think it's hard to hide a bad offensive line in the SEC. I mean, they still have to play Ole Miss. That's one of the best defensive fronts in the country. Alabama, Missouri's defensive front, Texas. I mean, in the Big 12, you could have played like Iowa State and Kansas State and Texas and sort of coasted through some of those other matchups. You can't do that in the SEC. And of course, they still have to play South Carolina with Kyle Kennard and Dylan Stewart. So I just don't see this offensive line getting fixed during the year to the point to where they can make the offense effective enough. And it also raises the question, too, of portal management on the offensive line. I think you want to have a homegrown offensive line that you sub kind of from the portal here and there. I don't think you want to have to be able to rely on 3 or 4 guys to come in and start year one. So the offensive line issues, and also the play calling / quarterback situation going forward. What do they do with Jackson Arnold? Is Michael Hawkins going to be the starter going forward? It's kind of a now versus later type situation for me, because what helps you right now might hurt you later, because I still think Jackson Arnold is really talented, but the offensive line, OC, receiver injuries have all played a part in this. So I just, 6 on the panic meter, maybe it's too high, maybe it's too low, but after the first 4 games, I think all of our preseason fears about Oklahoma were either confirmed, or maybe they're even worse than we anticipated, if that's fair.
No, it is. And yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, Steven. Portal evals on the offensive line, and quite frankly, they went cheap there. They lost out on Lance Hurd, who's now starting left tackle for Tennessee. Caden Green, of course, starting at Missouri. I mean, you know, just plug in those guys, and this may be a completely different offensive line for Oklahoma. But it is what it is. And, you know, I was listening to the Sooner Scoop guys after the game, and they were, of course, they were a little emotional. They were basically just, you know, despondent. And they didn't think there was a game here aside from Maine that you could book Oklahoma to win. Now I wouldn't go quite that far, but you could see their point after what just happened to them against Tennessee. Texas is going to get after them. South Carolina with that defensive line can get after them. Ole Miss, they're looking as good as anybody in the country. Missouri's defense has been a wildly impressive from what we kind of anticipated, and of course Alabama. So, I mean, 6-6 may be the ceiling for this football team after 4 games. Now, we may just be overreacting. Maybe Tennessee is like a, which this is, I mean, it's quite frankly, it's where they're at, top 5, top 6 in the country. Maybe they're that good. Maybe they're even better. So could that be the case where Tennessee just went in there and rocked them? Certainly. But being in the stands that day, Steven, it seemed like a team that was essentially incompetent on one side of the football, and this is the wrong time to be incompetent with the schedule coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even if to your point, if Tennessee is a top five team, which I think they are, you still have to play Ole Miss. You're still going to play Texas. You still have to play Alabama. It's not going to get any easier. I mean, there's four or five teams in the SEC that could easily be in the top five or six this week in the rankings. I will say, I thought the issues on offense and the offensive line may have obscured kind of the fact that Oklahoma's defense, I think, is pretty legit. And I know Tennessee probably took their foot off the pedal a little bit in the second half because of the injuries on the offensive line. But, you know, this group, I think, under Brent Venables has gotten to a point probably that's better than I anticipated when he took over. Like, they've reloaded and sort of kind of stocked that side of the ball. There's still room to go there. But I think, if anything, you feel pretty good about this group and sort of the direction that it's going. And I think it's a pretty legit SEC defense now. I don't think we could have said that 2 years ago.
Right. Well, it's almost like they did anything they could to get a defense, and it cost them an offense. Oh, no. I'm sorry to laugh, but that's, I mean, literally, that's kind of what happened there. But all right, so those are the only teams, right, on your panic meter, or do you have another one?
I got one more. Okay. It's a team that won on Saturday. How about Missouri? I'll grade them out as a five. And Mike, you tell me if I'm crazy here. I mean, we give Vanderbilt a lot of credit because they are much improved this year and our surprise team. But also, I think within that, the offensive kind of play for Missouri, something is just missing the last couple weeks. I mean, Murray State, Buffalo, it's one thing to blow those out. But for Brady Cook to be off now kind of in four games, his yards per attempt was at 9 last year. It's at 7.1 this year. His quarterback rating is down by almost 20 points. The biggest thing that's missing is the big plays. And, you know, you look last year, he had 26 completions of 30 plus yards, only 4 so far this year. So it's really kind of the element of, can they get Brady Cook back to being Brady Cook of last year? And also, I would like to see Missouri finish drives better. I mean, they had but how many field goals on Saturday against Vanderbilt? You know, you want to see touchdowns, and especially in a game like Vanderbilt where you're favored, you know, finishing drives and getting Brady Cook back to being the player that we saw. So I'm sort of like halfway panicked about Missouri, not really, but a little bit. And I'm worried about, they got to go to A&M and they got to go to Alabama. And I'm thinking about the way this offense has played through the first couple of weeks and in those, what that could mean for those two matchups.
Right. And all the talk last week, Stephen, was just how poor Vanderbilt's secondary is.
Yeah.
And it was, I know it was just one real big play, but it was Vanderbilt that was getting the big plays on Missouri. Now, after that big play, they kind of, I wouldn't say locked down, but they played significantly better. So, yeah, I mean, this is a real, real red flag to the point where I'm even starting to question whether Brady Cook is fully healthy, you know, just the way he is performing. But, yeah, that is cause for concern. Now, this is a good cause for concern, or not a good cause for concern, but a much better alternative than what they – usually what Missouri had for years, Stephen, was, you know, can we get to a bowl game? I mean, they're knocking on the door of making the playoff, but they're not pretty doing it, and they're freaking out. So I would much rather have that problem than be Auburn 2.0 and be 2-2 and wondering if we have any answers. So the standard has been raised, the expectations have been raised, and that's exactly where you want to be. But we got to figure this out quickly, because if they continue to play the way they've been playing, they're not going to the college football playoff. And that's should have been the goal, and I think still is a goal of this program.
Absolutely. I think the panic meter is not that, am I worried that they're going to be like a 6-6 team? It's more about, they have this opportunity with this core of players and the schedule to be a playoff team this year. And you have to capitalize on these opportunities when you have this favorable setup, because you're going to have, again, more departures after this year. So my question is, and this is kind of what the panic is, I'm looking at this Missouri team, seeing this is what they've done now in two power games against power opponents. The offense has been off. The defense has given up a big play here or there, but also I think for all the questions we had, it's been fine. So you feel okay about that side of the ball, but I think in order to win at A&M, to beat Alabama, to be a playoff team, this offense kind of has to take that next step and find that level that we saw last year. So this is about being a playoff team or playing in the Citrus Bowl. And that's kind of where my panic is for this Missouri team right now.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to add real quick to your panic meter here, Stephen, because I am panicking about two things in particular. And one is LSU and this defense. Now, again, same thing. They're winning. You know, that's what we should do here. And everything's in front of them. They're tied for first place in the conference. So how can we be panicked? Well, I'm panicked because of his defense, Stephen. I thought, you know, again, it bothers me so much when people say, and Florida fans should know this all too well, but when they say defense was so bad, it can't possibly get worse.
Some other idiot might have said that.
Well, I don't know if it's worse, but it seems equally as awful this season. Now, we're tightening up in the second half. I get it. But I am panicked. That, again, here's what we do, Stephen. We look at the schedule and we say, oh, okay, Ole Miss and Alabama, those are tough games. They're both at home. Let's say we just split those. We'll go 10-2 and we'll make the college football playoff, and Mike's an idiot. Well, the way this defense is playing, Arkansas can get you. A&M, if they show up, they can get you. Vanderbilt, from what we've seen, they can get you. I even throw Oklahoma. I mean, if they have the offense figured out by November 30th, they'll get you. You know what I mean? Like, if the defense plays the way it's been playing, you're going to lose multiple games down the stretch here. And once again, we're going to possibly ruin a very, very, very effective offense. Maybe not the caliber of it was last year, but they're starting to really heat up. What my panic meter, and again, it's probably low. It's like, well, no, it's really not for the defense. It's probably around a 7. What's your thoughts on that for the panic meter? I'm just talking to defense here.
Yeah, I was going to go with 6. So I think we're kind of on the same page here. Not to mention Harold Perkins being out for the rest of the year is huge. You know, he's like your ultimate. I know there's been some question about how he fits into the puzzle and what are they going to do at linebacker. But, you know, he's kind of one of those guys that can erase a lot of mistakes. And now he's out for the rest of the year. So a defense that already had sort of like, it's not an elite sort of talent group when LSU's defense already had questions, has even more now. And UCLA moving the ball in the first half stunned me, because UCLA's offense has been pretty bad to start the year. Hawaii and Indiana, they struggled to move the ball in those two games. They give up pretty generous in the first half if you're LSU's defense. And so, yeah, I am worried, because I think by default over the year, you get more ingrained in the system. You get some experience. Maybe it does translate a little bit improvement. But that schedule, there is a ton of like 50-50 toss-ups on the schedule. The week after they play Ole Miss, they have to go on the road and play Arkansas. That's got trap game written all over it. Like you said, Alabama, A&M, Arkansas, Ole Miss. There is a ton of games here that LSU is going to have to rely on Nussmeier to probably just win this game on his own. And also that also gets at the other concern, which is you've got to be able to run the ball with a little bit more consistency. And I liked what we saw against South Carolina. We've seen some spurts here and there, but they're going to have to find some ways to become a little bit more well-rounded, I think, in order to get to that 10-win mark and get to the college football playoff.
Now, the other one, Stephen, this is panic level 10 out of 10. Can you just take a wild guess on what has got me so panicked right now?
I'm going to guess it's Florida.
Man, you're too good, Stephen. Come on, 10 out of 10 panic meter. Billy Napier just won a game. I am panicked that he will gain some confidence here, that we're going to turn around and we're going to whoop Central Florida, and then all of a sudden they're going to be like, you know what? Maybe this Billy Napier, maybe he's on to something here. We got to keep him for another year. That panics the heck out of me, Stephen. So, I was not rooting for them to fail. This is my bookie lock of the week. Again, I've got 3 locks in a row. I was not rooting for them to fail last week, but in the back of my mind, I was like, man, for these Florida fans, I kind of hope it happens so that they can move on from this disaster. But he just captured some momentum. And again, when we talk, this would be the worst thing, but it'd be kind of the most comical thing for a lot of people, Stephen. Even if they lose to Central Florida and they keep Billy Napier, you know what's going to happen, don't you? Tennessee, there's going to be some upsets. Tennessee is going to be like top 3 in the country. Tennessee fans are going to be talking all their talk, how we're going to beat them by 100, yada, yada, yada. And then Tennessee is going to lose this damn game to Florida and Billy Napier. That's just destiny right there. So I'm panicked about that as well.
That's totally like in the script for the season, isn't it? You know, something crazy like that happening, because that's just the way that college football will go. I think the worst part about it is if you're a Florida fan, and of course there was like the college football sicko and some Florida fans was like, if we lose this game, we can get rid of him after Saturday. We don't have to hear about it. Now it's an off week. There's nothing going on as far as like, games or anything until you get ready to play UCF. So it is kind of a nightmare scenario right now if you're a Florida fan. I still think that Napier is going to need to run the table probably to save his job. Absent some really confusing administrative moves. If you read there was a CBS story posted last week that said Scott Strickland will still be making the hire. It's not ideal. There's a lot of other turnover there. So, maybe we're not reading this right, but I still think I think he's got to run the table or get to 9 wins to save his job.
I'm just panicked that it could happen, Stephen. Yeah. Of course, if he runs the table, he's coach of the year. They'd love it, but
yeah.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know about it. Oh, real quick, Stephen, before we get to our previews here. Appreciate you, Cousin JR. Gifted another membership. My man JR, he does it every episode. We thank you. And thank you, Cousin Matt. You're now official cousin to the channel. We appreciate you, brother. But all right, Stephen, so let's get into it. Week 5 SEC preview, and we said this from the top, not a lot of games this week, and that's great because they're almost exclusively conference matchups, and of course, the big one. Let's just start there. Let's not delay any longer, Stephen. Week 5, potentially game of the year here, Georgia at mighty Alabama. Cannot wait for this showdown. Thoughts on the heavyweight showdown here in Tuscaloosa, College Game Day, all the hoopla.
Man, can we go ahead and simulate the week until Saturday night so that this game can hurry up and get here? Because, man, I am so like eager to get to this game, because it is, like I said at the start, Mike, it is one of several SEC Super Bowls to come this year. And I just think back to last year's SEC championship game and think about how Alabama upset Georgia, and thinking how Jalen Milroe in that game, whether it was his passing at times or the legs, the mobility, how he was able to get Alabama into a position to win that game. And so Georgia's defense, how healthy is it? They got a lot of injuries up front. How are they going to be able to slow down Jalen Milroe? And if that offensive line for Alabama is still at full strength, and Caden Proctor is, able to go again like he was at Wisconsin, this offensive line, looking at what Kentucky did and was able to kind of push around Georgia a little bit, I'm interested to see what kind of just game plan that Kalen DeBoer and this staff have. So just, so many interesting angles of the offenses against the defenses. How does Carson Beck, can he get off to a faster start? Because against Clemson and Kentucky, he was kind of slow in the first half, picked it up a little bit. But also, there's also the kind of the brain trust, but between DeBoer and his X's and O's on offense and Kirby Smart on defense, there's so many interesting angles to what should be, like I said, it should be an SEC Super Bowl on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. And what do you make of, I know it's only been 3 games for each because they each had a bye last week, obviously, but so 2 weeks to prepare. How many new wrinkles do you think we'll see in this matchup? And for Georgia, I could be completely wrong, but I would imagine, aside from getting guys back, which that'll be paramount for them, but I would imagine most of the wrinkles will be via Alabama side with the new coaching staff and the new schemes, things that maybe they've ran at Alabama or Fresno or wherever, or even Sioux Falls, that could catch Kirby and them off guard. Do you think we'll see a lot of new wrinkles, or do you think they've kind of, Alabama's more fine-tuning what they've shown the first 3 weeks?
I think if there's something new, it probably comes from the Alabama side of things, just because, like you said, number one, both teams are coming off an off week, so that's good for the health of both teams and just getting both these teams close to full strength if we can. The other thing is, I think, Alabama, the schedule by playing Western Kentucky, South Florida was close, the road game at Wisconsin, they probably didn't have to show the full arsenal. You know, Georgia has played Clemson and they had the road game at Kentucky. They've had a much more difficult start to the season, but also continuity for Georgia. Same system, same OC, Alabama, everything is new. So I think if there is something kind of new to, you know, you're holding back, it's probably on the Alabama side of things, just because you had that opportunity with a little bit more of a favorable schedule, and you still have this new system that you've brought from Washington, but can also tweak it to fit Jalen Milroe's strengths too.
Now, which team do you think has not quite shown how good they can be, if that makes sense? Basically, what I'm really trying to ask you, Stephen, is Georgia better than what they've shown? And again, it's not like they've been awful, but do you think Georgia is much better than what they've shown, or are they kind of who they've shown us they are after 3 weeks?
I think they're better than what they've showed. You know, the game against Clemson was interesting because I did have a feeling that it was the first half and they were just trying to feel the Clemson defense out because of how good it is. And there was no need that they could probably just suffocate Clemson's offense and then they could open it up, which they did. But I had that same feeling in the Kentucky game. And I kept thinking, okay, they're going to turn it on at some point, right? And they're going to pull away. They didn't. And I think, you know, we talked about this after the Kentucky game, is that probably there was probably no one more happy that they had that close game than Kirby Smart, because he could drill this into him that, you know, whatever it is, nobody believes in us. You're not the number one team. Look what happened at Kentucky. Now you got to go on the road to Alabama and sort of refocus sort of your team for the season. So I think Georgia is capable of playing a lot better. You know, I think if there is a question, number one, Tate Ratledge is likely to be out, I would assume, after having tightrope surgery. But the other one is Alabama's secondary, I think, is still gettable. Like, I think you can make plays. But can Georgia's receivers consistently be able to make those plays on Saturday? Because, you know, I think we go back to that game against Kentucky or whether it was Clemson. Are they going to have enough difference makers this season to consistently stretch the field? I think they do. And I think they play just better on Saturday night.
What about the line of scrimmage, where this battle is always won between the two alphas in the sport, at least the last, you know, 5-10 years? Alabama or Georgia, who do you think is stronger on the line of scrimmage?
If Georgia is at full strength on defense, and that counts, you know, Mykel Williams and Warren Brinson, I would probably take Georgia at the line of scrimmage. You know, and I think the offensive line, they will miss Tate Ratledge, but I think there's enough talent there to overcome that. So I would probably lean Georgia at the line of scrimmage there.
Mm-hmm. And would it at all be, because I've heard the argument, and it's fair, not that Georgia accepts any loss, but a loss doesn't kill them, given that their schedule, you know, at Texas, at Ole Miss, Tennessee at home, these are all potential wins over top four, maybe even top three teams. I mean, legitimately, you know, like elite wins here. So I'm not trying to downplay this game for Georgia, but what about for Alabama, Stephen? If they drop to Georgia at home, again, they will be eliminated from nothing, but it feels like this would be more devastating to Alabama than it would be for Georgia. Would you agree with that?
I would, because I think looking at Georgia's schedule, and certainly we're in this new era of the 12-team playoff that I think we're all kind of guessing what the committee's going to do. But I think that Georgia at 10-2, given that schedule, is probably going to be just fine. I also think there's a, you know, I mean, Georgia, obviously, they have those marquee games. Like, they could just beat Texas in a few weeks. And I'm sitting here as we're talking, wondering if we're going to see kind of the SEC beat up on each other a little bit over the next month or so, where all these teams, just all the good teams in the league, beat up on all the good teams, and we end up with teams with one loss at the end of the year or so. So that's going to be another factor in this. But it's also a huge opportunity for Kalen DeBoer in his first SEC game. You get Georgia coming to your place, and you're an underdog for the first time at home since like 2007. You know, I mean, this is a huge opportunity for the staff to get off to a fast start. So Georgia's schedule allows it some opportunities, but Tennessee has to go, of course, on the road. Or sorry, Alabama has to go on the road to play Tennessee and LSU. So I think Georgia's schedule is a little bit more favorable for a rebound there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to be talking about this game all week long. Steven's going to make his prediction. Remember, live Wednesday night. But let's get into another matchup here, Steven. The only matchup I got a preview graphic for. I ran out of time, but that's why we're going to Kentucky at number 6, Ole Miss. Finally, the Ole Miss Rebels, Steven, get into conference competition, and they are a massive favorite here at home, as they should be. But thoughts on this matchup? Ole Miss favored by, I believe, 20 points at home over Kentucky. Excuse me, 17.5. It's changed. 17.5 at home.
You know, on the most kind of basic level for this game, the thing that interests me the most is Kentucky's defense against the Ole Miss offense. Can Kentucky win enough on the defensive side of the ball to slow down what Ole Miss has, just the weapons, whether it's on the ground, whether it's the receivers? Ole Miss has had, an injury or two on the offensive line this year. I think how does it hold up against this Kentucky front is a real question. So I think there's something to learn here because it's kind of the end of the preseason for Ole Miss. It's their first SEC game. It's their first real opponent this year. So I am interested to see how Ole Miss handles this. How do they handle Kentucky's defense? And I think if you're Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, you want to jump on Kentucky early. Don't let them get you into the slog that you saw Georgia get into. If you get up by 2 touchdowns or so, that forces Kentucky out of its game plan, which is to kind of slow things down, low possession, play to your defense, play to your run game, which also might be a challenge too, because I think it's very easy given the schedule to look at Ole Miss's stats on defense and go, yeah, of course, look who they played. But I think the eye test tells you that this looks more like an SEC defense and a defense that is capable of kind of handling some of the better offenses on their schedule. So I think this will be a good test for them as well.
How about this for Kentucky, though, Steven? I get it. It's not anticipated. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if Kentucky were to pull the upset, beat Ole Miss in Oxford, they would essentially be where we thought they'd be in the preseason, 3-2 after 5, with, you're just flipping that South Carolina game for Ole Miss. Would you agree with that take?
Yeah, I would. And also looking ahead, too, they have a little bit of momentum after the Georgia game and the Ohio game. And so even in a loss here, a good showing, Vanderbilt, Florida, Auburn's about as pretty favorable of a winning streak as you could put together for the next couple of weeks. So I think there's an opportunity here. And I think that's kind of what I'm interested in getting a read on Kentucky, because they've been kind of all over the place. But if they could somehow keep this one close, pull off an upset, that schedule coming up, they can start to stack some wins together before it gets a little bit tougher in November.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that, again, I realize Ole Miss is just playing at an incredible rate pretty much on all sides of the ball. But, the focus is on offense with Lane Kiffin and Jackson Dart and all the weapons. But, we've seen Kentucky they completely stifled Georgia. What are the chances that they stifle Ole Miss? And when I guess that's, you're grading on a curve here. So stifle, 28 points or less. I mean, if you hold Ole Miss to 28 points or less, I think you probably played an A-plus type performance, at least for your defense.
Yeah, I do too. But most teams are having trouble holding them under 50. So yeah, I think that kind of is the key for Kentucky, is to try to get Ole Miss into a game where maybe they have like 3 or 4 possessions in the first half. And the same thing in the second one, low possessions, let the clock run down to 1 second and snap the ball and, sort of run the ball and play to your defense. So I think that's the formula for Kentucky. And if they can hold them under, 30 or so, they probably have a chance. But I think if Ole Miss jumps on them early, it's tough to see Kentucky being able to keep pace.
Mm-hmm. How about this one, Steven? Arkansas, Texas A&M. In Jerry World, hopefully for the last time ever here, A&M slight favorite, 3.5-point favorite, but Arkansas's got some serious momentum. Safe to say A&M does as well, but how do you preview this one?
Man, this series is a weird one, isn't it? Like, I could still see KJ Jefferson trying to dive into the end zone, the field goal. That, I mean, there's this series usually has it all. So I guess the top of my list is, what weird, crazy play are we going to see on Saturday that has a large impact on this game? But I think, you know, going back to last week for Texas A&M, I'm kind of curious, were they just going through the motions to beat Bowling Green because they beat Florida and they have Arkansas coming up? It was kind of a tough little sandwich game in between there. So I think trying to figure out almost like where A&M is in this season, but also for Arkansas, if they can steal this game where they're an underdog in, you know, all of a sudden to be sitting here, you know, talking about being 4-1, you know, a chance to kind of build on that going forward, it'd be huge for Sam Pittman. So I'm interested sort of in the kind of where are these teams too, because Arkansas almost lost to UAB and they, you know, they played last week at Auburn and, you know, still had some issues on both sides of the ball. They're going to have to get cleaned up. So just a lot of psychological intrigue for these two teams, but the quarterbacks also fascinate me because Talen Green has been inconsistent at times through the air. What does Marcel Reed do? There wasn't a lot of big plays last week for A&M. I thought it was really interesting that Mike Elko said that quarterback will be a game time decision basically every week going forward. That is the first time I think I may have seen a head coach say that. So I think the quarterbacks are the X factors here, and kind of which defense is a little bit better against the run is going to be crucial too as well.
Right, and that is something that I'm a little concerned about, going back and forth and back and forth with the quarterback situation. So again, I guess we will do this every week. Thank you, Mike Elko. But yeah, if both quarterbacks are 100%, who do you start here if you're A&M?
I would start Marcel Reed. You know, I think it is fair to wonder, you know, what's his kind of upside in the passing game, because he played Florida and he's played Bowling Green this year. But I think his mobility, and I also think he just seems to be a little bit better fit in the offense. Now, if you're telling me that Connor Wigman was playing at like 50% in the opener and he was still struggling with that after, I might be inclined to change my opinion, but I think just Reed just fits this offense a little better right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you said something, you know, wild things happen, I just think of Talen Green. I think of Bobby Petrino. I think of
revenge game for Petrino too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so many layers to this thing. But which Talen Green will show up? It's going to be difficult with that pass rush. I mean, Auburn pass rush got after him, but you know, he'll give you one and then he'll burn you on one. You know what I mean? So, and you know, shout out Jaquinton Jackson, number one in the SEC in rushing. Andrew Armstrong, I believe, number two in the SEC in receiving. Talen Green, top 10 in the SEC in rushing and passing. So there's a lot to like about Arkansas in this matchup, but the series history, of course, leans heavily towards A&M in the last couple of years as SEC opponents. But again, that doesn't have much to do with this matchup, but they got that bad mojo for this one. You know what?
Yeah, it does. It seems like no matter how well it's going for Arkansas in that game, it seems like A&M just finds a way to win. One other thing I would throw out there as an X factor for Arkansas is I would like to see Luke Haas be more involved this week. And of course, some of that is Talen Green's accuracy and maybe streakiness as a passer. But Harold Fannin for Bowling Green, the tight end last week, you know, had a really good game against this Texas A&M defense. And I think we've seen, you know, at times you can attack this A&M defense with the run. Notre Dame did. Maybe they give up some passing plays to the edge too at times. So, you know, I think there is a real opportunity here for Arkansas to move the ball. I mean, A&M is, despite their defensive front, I think if you're Talen Green and Jaquinton Jackson, find some ways to move it on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Real quick here, Stephen, I'm just now seeing this. Apologies, cousin Brandon here, but he gave us a donation, so we appreciate you. No way in hell is Ole Miss Kentucky a close game. And I'm not saying it will be, but trying to make an entertaining and interesting show here. But of course, that's what Mizzou
trying to be optimistic too.
Well, that too. That's exactly what I said last week, Stephen, about Missouri Vanderbilt, and these Missouri people were like, "Get the hell out of here!" They should have lost that damn game. So you just never know. How about this one, Stephen? Oklahoma at Auburn. Oh boy! I mean, it's like the first to 14 points probably gonna win this game.
If you can tell me what's going on in this game, Please, I'm all ears because this is the biggest mystery game of the week in the SEC. It also feels like a huge sort of swing game for both teams. You know, Oklahoma coming off the loss, they're going on the road in the SEC to a new environment. How do they handle that? Also, what's like the over-under and how many quarterbacks do both teams play? Does Jackson Arnold start? Do they go with Hawkins? Does Hawkins start? Does Arnold play? How many quarterbacks does Auburn play? If there is one constant that I think you feel good about is the Oklahoma defense and seeing how Auburn's the turnovers, the inconsistency along the offensive line with, you know, whatever you, however, you know, offensive line penalties, turnovers, there's a real opportunity here that I think Oklahoma's defense can go on the road, play well, control the game, and give their offense a chance to win. So quarterback intrigue, and it may come down to which team is better at limiting some of those mistakes, whether that's turnovers or penalties or kind of special teams, something like that might decide it, because it's probably going to be pretty close and pretty low scoring, I would imagine.
Who needs this one more, do you think?
Man, that's a good question. I'm tempted to say Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Because it feels like if you're Brent Venables, obviously there's a lot of pressure at Oklahoma, but it's the first year of the SEC, and you could kind of understand that with the offensive line thing. I think with Hugh Freeze's second year, knowing their schedule coming up, that they might need to get one of these swing games to get to a bowl game. I would go with Auburn probably in that one.
Cousin Matt says, I bet the over. Over five turnovers. Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, being at home, you know, he can get back. He can win these fans back. He ain't going to win me back, but he can win some of these fans back. But it's got to start here, and maybe they can get on a roll. But I can't imagine there's much confidence on the Plains. And just listen to these Oklahoma fans. They've got absolutely no confidence in virtually anybody on the offensive side of the football. So, man, this is this is a gotta have it type game.
You know, one stat that I think is worth watching here is Oklahoma leads the SEC in turnovers forced, and Auburn leads the SEC in the most giveaways. So, you know, in a game where it's like 50-50, these quarterbacks are a question, it seems like turnovers are probably going to be pretty crucial. So to your point on the fan who was mentioning about the turnovers, you might be spot on there.
All right, how about Mississippi State at Texas? Oh, good night. Good luck there, Bulldogs.
Man, it's hard to find a way that Mississippi State keeps this one close. I mean, like sort of like Texas Tech showing up, maybe instead, or you know, UTSA or something. It's a heavy lift for Mississippi State, but I think that kind of, you know, the next 2 weeks against the next two games, Texas and Georgia, it's an opportunity for Jeff Lebby, I think, to sort of like find some guys who can start to be your core for next season, play well and build around them. And also Michael Van Buren. I mean, if you want to find out what a quarterback has, throw him in there against Texas and Georgia and see how he plays. So I'm interested to see what we can learn about Mississippi State. And also on the other side of things, it's Arch Manning if he starts, or it's Quinn Ewers if he's healthy. So quarterback intrigue for both teams, very high on my list. But in terms of spread, probably watchability, it's probably going to be Texas in probably a landslide.
Right. And they're nearly 40 point favorites in this game, Stephen, 38.5. So whew, this
is that
could get ugly.
Is that one of the bigger spreads you've seen in the SEC in some time, other than like maybe like Vanderbilt, like playing
that, or and sadly the Chad Morris era?
Oh,
I think they were 45 point underdogs on the road at Alabama 1 year. I think they covered, actually, but
Chad Morris era, they covered.
I mean, that was the best SEC win that guy ever got. But I mean, that's up there. This one. I've never seen it, and maybe it's not possible. But they could like shorten the quarters in the in the second half for this one. They legitimately could. All right, final matchup here: South Alabama at LSU. Stephen, what can you tell us about South Alabama, who is a 21-point underdog in this matchup?
So I was going to say something a little crazy here. I think South Alabama's offense might be a better test for LSU's defense, or for LSU's defense, than UCLA's offense was last week.
Wow.
So this South Alabama team scored 87 points in week three. Granted, it was against Northwestern State, but still, 87 points is 87 points. Then they went on the road last week and destroyed Appalachian State 48-14.
Ooh.
App State was the preseason favorite in the Sun Belt East. So they are rolling up some impressive numbers offensively. They are led by, I guess, SEC legend now, Major Applewhite. I guess the SEC record book has to claim him, but he's in his first year there as the head coach because Kane Womack left to be the defensive coordinator at Alabama. They do struggle to stop the pass. We've seen that in their first couple games. They gave up a ton of yards to North Texas. But I think that's the kind of the key here for LSU is this offense for South Alabama. Gio Lopez is their quarterback. He can make plays with his legs and his arm. They also have a really talented freshman running back by the name of Fluff Bothwell, who's very good. So I actually think this is a really good test for LSU's defense and a much better test than what UCLA brought to Death Valley last week.
Interesting, yeah, because, I mean, I thought they would steamroll UCLA last week. Of course, I mean, it was decided, you know, they won convincingly, I should say. But at halftime, I was like,
buddy.
I was at the Oklahoma game, so I wasn't able to watch it in live, but I was just – I was just hoping that LSU didn't blow it, but thankfully they didn't. But so can they contain Fluff? That'll be the big question entering this one. You know what?
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, Gio Lopez and Fluff are going to be a tough test for LSU's defense. But I think on the other side, on paper, it's hard to see South Alabama slowing down Garrett Nussmeier. But like I said, it is a good test for LSU's defense.
Well, Steven, we're at the break point here. We almost went 90 minutes, a little extra with all the quarter season awards. But a great time to remind the folks, if they haven't already, head on over to mybookie.ag, the online sportsbook. Sign up today, free account. Put in that promo code THATSEC, that's THATSEC over at MyBookie. They're willing to double your initial deposit all the way up to $1,000. And all we do is pick winners the last couple of weeks. We had an off week. Everybody gets one off week, but we've been right every other week seemingly. But before we go, Steven, before you give us your MyBookie, let me ask it to you this way. Have you already selected, you don't have to reveal it just yet, you do it on Wednesday, have you already selected your MyBookie Lock of the Week this week?
I think I have a favorite. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, such confidence, right? I might go back to the well with Ole Miss this week. That's kind of where I'm leaning right now.
Okay. Well, hey, Steven, before we go, as always, tell everybody how can they follow you? How can they find your work?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at Aflon Steven, Steven L CFB on Facebook and Instagram, and AflonSports.com. We've got plenty of previews, predictions, rankings, everything during the week to keep you updated on college football.
All right, Steven, well, I can't thank you enough for dropping all this knowledge on us. Again, I can't wait for Wednesday. Steven and I, well, Steven will be giving his picks, and I'll be here to mock them relentlessly in live time. But thank you, Steven. Thank you, each and every one of you, for hanging out. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.